Morning. Good to see everybody today, and good to have everyone here. Appreciate all those who worked so hard last night to make the stewardship banquet a success. Okay, I'll tell you what, I've got a few more of those too, Brian. Let me give them to you. If anybody does not have the handout, we have just a few more of them here, okay? Brian will get those out to you, okay? There we go. Let us get our things together. The two things I want to be passing around during the morning service this morning, or during the Sunday school hour. And I want you to be looking at these things. Before I say that, though, look at our attendance this morning. This is terrible. Now, you know, whenever we have an activity on Saturday night, it's always a little tough, I know, sometimes. But, boy, you know, people tend to do what they want to do. You know, one of the things I noticed when I was in school, a guy sprains his ankle, but if he really wants to play basketball, he'll play with a sprained ankle. But if he doesn't want to go to algebra class, then his sprained ankle will take him to the nursing station. Have you ever noticed how that works? You know, sometimes people have problems, and those problems keep them from doing what they ought to do. Other times, those problems can become an obstacle to overcome and can be a great source of strength and encouragement and character for them. So, same thing applies to church. Okay? Let's keep those thoughts in mind, and let's do what we can to encourage others to come to church. I know sometimes when you scold people who are here about the people who aren't here, that sounds sort of contradictory. But I'm telling you to be encouragement to them. We've had a number of people that have been out for some time on Sunday school. And this material that we're studying right now is particularly, it really is, it is particularly important and very, very necessary for us to know. The two things that I want to be sending around for you to look at during Sunday school are these. This is a catalog. It's the spring catalog of Prometheus Books. Prometheus Books is a publishing house for humanism, basically. Remember who Prometheus was? Anybody remember who Prometheus was? Prometheus was a Greek god, sort of a demigod, really, who decided that he was going to cast off the authority of the Greek gods and he was going to be self-sufficient. And he defied the pantheon of gods and got a victory and became a full-fledged man, I believe it was, something like that. At any rate, the whole idea of Prometheus is someone who is going to free himself by casting off the restraint of the gods. Okay, so that's the very name of this publishing house indicates that kind of thing. But I want you to just look through here. Now, again, I want you to be very careful because some of this stuff in here is a little shocking, okay? But you'll see all kinds of information in here that will verify those things we've been saying about humanism. And, for example, there's a book in here by James Randi. He's that former magician who now debunks phony religion. And a couple of books in here by well-known humanist and popular entertainer Steve Allen. Everybody thinks, oh, well, Steve Allen, he's a nice fellow, right? Leading humanist. Dumped, D-U-M-B-T-H, Dumped, and 81 Ways to Make Americans Smarter, with a foreword by Norman Cousins. And then he's got another book here on Stephen Allen called Meeting of the Minds, and all kinds of books about Isaac Asimov, who signed the Humanist Manifesto too, as you may know. And then, of course, a lot of good books in here. Right on the same page, there's something Beyond the War on Drugs and Deadly Blessings, that's Faith Healing on Trial, trying to show what's wrong with all these different policies. So you look at some of the things in here and become familiar with some of the names, become familiar with some of the titles. Now this, Mrs. Zeller gave me this. I don't think she subscribes to this, but they sent it to her anyway. Okay. This is called Discoveries Through Inner Quests. And this is a resource catalog for New Age materials. Okay, now you can look at the front of it. That's a very New Age type concept. It has the grid, you know, and the world beyond, and here we are. We're going to travel all through the universe and accomplish great things. And inside this thing, there are all kinds of things here about helping you improve your grades. You'll see that this Jonathan Parker guy, any of you who watch a whole lot of TV will recognize this fella. He's on there promoting a lot of this stuff from time to time, but a lot of subliminal tapes in here. In other words, this is the big thing now, is to place subliminal tapes with a message underlying those tapes. There will be some type of hypnotic message. If you want to quit smoking, for example, you can get a certain type of music, and they'll usually have sounds of nature. There'll be sea waves or the wind blowing or trains or things like that, you know, natural sounds. And then there will be all kinds of... listen to this. The Prosperity Solution, Volume 2. Tape 11 here, the quick break tape. I deserve success. Getting the action habit. Tape 12, think prosperity. Success is yours. Tape 13, abundance through giving. Facing challenges. Attracting success and prosperity. Creativity for success. Giving and receiving abundantly. Overcoming procrastination. You see how they weave in true principles with all this selfishness? And then the subliminal tape, becoming a successful achiever. And some of these kinds of things. Memory power. Visualization. The secret to your success. Remember we talked about that? Here's one. Look at this. Seek expert counsel from your inner mind. Okay? The answer to permanent weight control. Lose 15 pounds of ugly fat. Cut your head off. Okay. Create a positive new life. Okay. Oh, here's one. Attract your soulmate. Psychic self-defense. Jonathan on the Beatitudes. You see that? Super still. Accelerating spiritual growth. All these are subliminal. What is? These are all tapes that are to help you in your quest for enlightenment. You see that? Okay. And what else we got? Journey to the heights of self-discovery. Here's some guy looking up into the stars. And, you know, a couple of years ago, we had a slide program, a stewardship bank called Building the Body. And we used that little symbol, Michelangelo's sketch of man, you know, with his arms stretched out. I was opposed to that, and I was won over by argument by some people who were involved in producing that. And the reason I was is because that is a New Age symbol, okay? It really is. And you'll see it in here. But it's been picked up by them. Explore the dimensions. Ancient secrets revealed. You see it? There it is. Ancient secrets revealed. Discover love. Fantastic journeys. And all this kind of nonsense. Well, anyway, take a look at some of these things. Now, again, let's start it over here. We'll start it here and you all work through it. I don't spend a whole lot of time reading that. Just get it around where people can see it. And this is the thing. You'll find these things at airports. You'll find them in bookstores. On a lark the other day, I went into Walden Books. I was traveling back from Washington, D.C., and I stopped at a mall to just take a break and look at the mall. I wanted to get some ideas as we're working on our concepts here for building. And I stopped there, and I went into Walden Books. I had read that Walden Books was one of the primary outlets for New Age materials. There was a shelf of stuff that was probably 12, 14 feet long, floor to ceiling, of subliminal tapes. And messages, things that you could buy, and they would have all these, and then two shelves next to it of New Age materials. Unbelievable. Just really something. So the New Age thing, we're going to get into that some, but I want to get a little further with this material on humanism. And we've got the handout, Why Study Humanism and the New Age Movement. Where today, I believe we're into the place on the brief history of humanism. Is that where we are? Okay, did you all open in prayer? Okay. All right, the brief history of humanism. Sometimes when you talk about humanism to the average person today, they're going to wonder what you're talking about. They're going to think, well, what's wrong with humanism? What's the matter? Why the problem here? Isn't humanism a good thing? And it seems like it ought to be. But humanism today does not mean what humanism means in history. Humanism in history is something far different. It originally became popular. It was a literary and cultural European movement of the 15th century. It had a lot to do with the Renaissance and the Reformation. And this cultural literary movement, called humanism, was a movement to restore the dignity of man, basically. Now, I know that some of the statements I'm making this morning are very simplistic, but we're not here to teach history, okay? We're here to teach our philosophy, for that matter. We're here to teach the Bible and show you alternatives in men's thinking today to the Bible truth so that you can understand where men are. In other words, on the one hand, we have a restoration of personal dignity and freedom to think versus the authoritarianism of church and scholasticism. Okay? Now, The Roman Catholic Church in that day basically did everybody's thinking for them. Told them, this is the way it's going to be, and we have people who are studying the truth, and you just need to trust them, and you need to submit yourself to that teaching. The church architecture that we have seen for centuries, we mentioned this last night, has grown out of that idea that the church is the place that you go to get to God. And the philosophy was, in those days, that the church was a little picture of heaven. And the fellow could leave his little hut with a thatched roof and his ox cart, and he could go to town, and he could go into the cathedral where there would be the gold and the silver and the tapestries and the painting and the candles and all this majesty, and he would somehow then come into contact with the spiritual realm. And he would realize that here in the church was the way of getting to God. But of course, what that taught was that the church is a building, not a body of people, and that the way to God is through formality and a system instead of the person of Jesus Christ. Now, that does not mean to say that we ought not to have nice buildings, okay, or that they ought not to honor the Lord. But a lot of false thinking got started that way. So the humanist movement of the Renaissance and Reformation was an attempt to restore the personal dignity of man and his freedom to think, okay? It went back to classical antiquity, to the Greeks primarily, and to some degree the Roman philosophers, who put an emphasis on man as something different than he was seen as during the Middle Ages. On the one hand, they saw man as the homo creator, the fellow who was a creator, a maker, a doer of things, or what he actually was in his heart and in his mind, as opposed to the fabricator, the one who was actually just a worker. Okay, on the one hand, what man is, as opposed to the other hand, what man does. During the Middle Ages, the Dark Ages especially, many who were in authority began to see the masses of people just as producers. Now, communism has seen that had that same attitude toward man for a long, long time. One of the things that you'll notice about humanism is that it demeans individuals while it seeks to lift the race of mankind generally. You see? Whereas Christianity lifts men one at a time, humanism hopes to lift all of mankind, but it does so at the expense of individual men. And so keep that thought in mind. This goes back to this idea that life over here is emphasized over the man's trade. What a man is as opposed to what a man does was the emphasis. The humanities as opposed to natural sciences were the emphasis. In other words, art and literature. In this humanistic movement of that era, those things were emphasized. And the arts became very, very important. And there were many patrons of the arts in government. And about these kinds of things where a man who would be in authority, he wanted to leave his mark on the world, and so he would commission some artist and pay his way, like Michelangelo or others, and they would be given money, and they would then work on or create art which would be a testimony to man's ability to make beautiful things. And the humanities were emphasized over just the trades and observation of outward physical things. That's historical humanism. And I know that that's a ridiculously simplistic overview that I just gave you. Okay? But the modern secular humanism that we see today is basically an American phenomenon. It is something that has grown within America as an alternative to man being a created being under God. Okay? And this modern American humanist movement, oh, it's 200 plus or minus years old, goes back to the time of the foundation of our nation. It is rooted in human rebellion and intellectual pride. A man rebelling against God, being proud of himself about what he is, thinking that he doesn't need God, that's where this modern movement of humanism has its roots. Okay? It has moved from non-biblical theism to anti-biblical secularism. Now, what do we mean by that? Everybody knows about the separation of church and state, right? Where do we find the expression, a wall of separation between the church and the state. Where does that expression come from? Anybody know? Yeah, it was in a letter that Thomas Jefferson wrote, in a speech that he made. Yeah, a lot of people say, well, that's in the Constitution. No. That was Thomas Jefferson's interpretation of a principle. You see? Okay? So, and then this whole right to privacy thing is another thing. Does the Constitution guarantee you a right to privacy? Do you have a right to do anything you want to do as long as you're in private? According to our Constitution? You have a right to commit murder in private? You see? No, you don't. And see, these kinds of things have grown out of human interpretations. But this anti-biblical secularism, if you go to the average person today and say, well, you know, we got to emphasize separation of church and state, that almost means, in the modern public mind, that anything that is public, anything that is public, must not in any way support or promote Christianity. Even if it's privately owned. In other words, separation of church and state has almost become separation of life from God in America today. So it started, of course, in non-biblical theism. Remember what theism is? Theism as opposed to atheism. Theism is belief in God primarily as having revealed Himself. And deism, now again, these are simplistic definitions, but deism, a good way to remember it, is belief in God through reasoning. The idea that God exists, but He's not involved with His creation. He made it, now He's leaving it alone. That's the deist position. Benjamin Franklin was a deist. Thomas Jefferson was probably a deist. And our founding fathers, they had this idea that there was a God. It was non-biblical. And because it was non-biblical, of course, that contributed to it. But other things have eventually led us to an anti-biblical secularism. Now, that's the modern secular humanist movement. Now, there's some documents that you need to be familiar with. One is the Humanist Manifesto of 1933. The Humanist Manifesto was written by a number of individuals. Well, actually, one fellow wrote it. I think it was Sellers. Henry Ward Sellers, I believe, wrote it. And a number of other people signed it, notably John Dewey and some others. And John Dewey, of course, the father of modern public education. And then there was another humanist document that was written in 1973. Let's see if I can find what I'm looking for here. We'll go into a few details on this in the future. But the second document was the Humanist Manifesto 2 of 1973. It was basically written by a fellow named Paul Kurtz. Now, as you're sending that Prometheus Books catalog around, if you flip through there, you'll probably see some books written by Paul Kurtz. Paul Kurtz he calls himself a skeptic. He would like to think of himself as a skeptic. And a skeptic is a fellow who says, well, I'm not going to believe anything unless I can verify it through my reasoning ability. You see. But Paul Kurtz and others, Isaac Asimov, Lester Mondale, I believe he's either the brother or half-brother of Walter Mondale. These men signed the Humanist Manifesto II. A number of people, many popular entertainers are involved in this. And in there, basically, they took it from a position called religious humanism in the original Humanist Manifesto to secular humanism, they were calling it, by the time they got around to the Humanist Manifesto II. The noteworthy statement of the Humanist Manifesto II that was made by Paul Kurtz was this, quote, "No deity will save us. We must save ourselves." Blatant disregard for God and rebellion against God. They say, well, what difference does this make to us? The difference this makes to us is that secular humanism, for the most part, is the state religion today. It is the philosophy that is being taught in the public school system. It is believed by most of the people in the NEA. You're aware of what the NEA is, right? A lot of people think, well, NEA, that's a professional teachers association. Yeah, that's a nice way of saying it is a union, okay? It is a teachers union. And they, by the way, are pushing right now for national teacher certification. I don't know if they're going to get it or not, but they sure would like to have it. In 1980, a secular humanist declaration was written. And if you were to purchase these little booklets from some bookstore or order them from Prometheus Books, in Volume 1, a little leaflet or a little pamphlet, you would get the Humanist Manifesto. And in Volume 2, you would get both the Humanist Manifesto 2 and the Secular Humanist Declaration. They're both bound together. And the Secular Humanist Declaration takes this a little bit further into social activism. What we are going to do in society because we believe these things. Then in 1985, there was another one written called The Affirmation of Humanism, and I think there's even been one since then. Let me see if I can find one of these things in here and give you a little bit of an idea of what's in there. This is the 1985 Affirmation of Humanism, a statement of principles and values. Here's what it says. This was printed in the Humanist magazine in 1985. We are committed to the application of reason and science to the understanding of the universe and to the solving of human problems. Do we live in a world that believes that science can solve all of our problems? Yes, we do. We deplore efforts to denigrate human intelligence, to seek to explain the world in supernatural terms, and to look outside nature for salvation. Remember what Gandhi said? Gandhi said a lot of stuff that wasn't true, by the way. Okay? But he made an interesting statement, and the only reason I give him credit for it is because he said it. He said, it makes no sense whatsoever for a man to dedicate his life to fighting against something in which he claims not to believe. That's an interesting concept. Now, why do humanists fight religion? Why do they fight Christianity? Yes, sir. They don't want to be accountable to God. That's one reason. Now, on the rational level, in their hearts, they don't want to be accountable to God. How do they justify it rationally? Why does Christianity need to be opposed? It isn't true. Okay. Why do they care? Yes.
It's an obstacle.
It's an obstacle. Obstacle to what?
To what they're trying to accomplish?
Yes, sir. Okay. In other words, in order for men to evolve into the society that we ought to have, we've got to remove those things which are hindering it. And we are the hindrance. I saw a car yesterday that had a bumper sticker that said, visualize world peace. Have you seen that? Now, if you're going to visualize world peace, you're going to have to visualize it without us, if you're of that stripe. Because we are the hindrance to that, according to them. Okay? And the New Age is going to conveniently come along and provide the philosophical base for believing that the force has removed us as an obstacle when the rapture occurs. You see? You think about it. It's amazing how things are developing so rapidly. We believe that scientific discovery and technology can contribute to the betterment of human life. TV show on a decade ago, The $6 Million Man. Opening, whatever they call it, of that show, the opening thing, you know, where the stars were shown and their names were given. And that guy that's on there, I can't remember his name, he's from Kentucky. He went to Eastern Kentucky University. But he comes on and the guy's running and he's got all these artificial parts. And they show a picture of him, he's in a plane crash or something. I'm not sure what happened, but anyway, the guy got all messed up. And the scientists are coming on saying, we can put him back together. In fact, we can make him better. That's what they said. Well, here it is 10 years later, and they still can't make people better. And they would like for us to believe that that's possible. And all these popular movies of recent days about these so-called cyborgs, which are combination man-machines and things like that. You'd like to see how advanced our technology is? Go up and ask Marco to show you his arm. Okay? He finally turned his electric arm in and got a mechanical arm because the electric arm is such a nuisance because it works so poorly. And it's easier to use the mechanical arm that he operates with his shoulders. And they would have you to think that they could just take something and just work it right in there. and they can put an eyeball in the guy's head that, you know, has a computer inside of it and all this kind of stuff, and he can look at you and, you know, see the fillings in your teeth and all this kind of nonsense. I mean, people would love to think that we have that kind of ability. And maybe the technology exists to do some of that, but it's not practical. You see? Man loves to think that he has the ability, doesn't he? At the same time that we're aborting millions of babies, we still retain for ourselves the right to pull the rabbit out of the hat by having a so-called test tube baby now and then, right? Test tube baby, as though we were actually creating life in all this business. In other words, man wants to look to science to solve his theological problems. We are committed to the principle of separation of church and state. What does that mean? Now, we are committed to the principle of the elimination of the church, okay? Hey, here's an interesting thought. Nobody in America wants to live in a society where there are no churches. But everybody in America wants to live as though there were no churches. Have you ever thought about that? Vance Havner said that. I read that recently. We cultivate the arts of negotiation and compromise as a means of resolving differences and achieving mutual understanding. What does that mean? We are really the reasonable ones. We are the ones who want to sit down like gentlemen and discuss things, not like these irrational Christians. Why? And here they drag this out again. More blood has been shed in the name of Christ than in any other, you know, have you heard that, right? Okay? Hatred. In other words, Christians are really hateful. That's what they're saying. We are concerned with securing justice and fairness in society and with eliminating discrimination and intolerance. Unless, of course, we're talking about fundamentalists, and then we have absolutely no tolerance whatsoever for them. Remember Bloom's statement in the beginning of his book, Closing the American Mind, on a college campus today? Everything is tolerated except intolerance. And we will not tolerate that. We are concerned, let's see, we believe in supporting the disadvantaged and the handicapped so that they will be able to help themselves. Well, we need humanism, you see, to give us real compassion for the needy, because the Christians aren't going to do this. By the way, I've been studying up on this thing that we're going to be doing on Friday, radio thing on Satanism. And I mentioned last night that Satanism is the logical conclusion of moral relativism. Did you know that Satanism doesn't attack anything except Christianity? The ultimate expressions of evil in our society are always against Christianity. Why not Mormonism? Why, when the devil is really running rampant, why doesn't he go after the Hindus? Yeah, no threat to them. They're part of it, you see. When the devil is, I mean, when the Satanists get together and have their sacrifices, why don't they blaspheme or profane the Muslim religion? Now, you know the answer to it. Don't you? Sure. Yes, sir. Oh, I'm sure they'll be persecuted to some degree. Sure they will. But the devil has got his eye on Christ. That's his real enemy. Okay, and the humanists will manifest this, but the satanic motivation behind this is not going to be consistent according to man's principles. It's going to be consistent according to the devil's principles, which is anti-Christ. Okay? Listen to this statement. We attempt to transcend divisive parochial loyalties based on race, religion, nationality, creed, class, or ethnicity, and strive to work together for the common good of humanity. There it is. You see what's underlying that statement? The thing that's really dividing us is all of this sectarianism. Now, it's okay. Whatever you want to believe is okay, so long as it contributes to all of us getting along and bringing in the age of Aquarius and so on. Okay? Listen to this. Now, this is going to explain a lot of stuff. We want to protect and enhance the earth and to preserve it for future generations and to avoid inflicting needless suffering on other species. What is that? That's the animal rights movement. Did you know that there's a city in Iowa that has passed an ordinance? This city is known for its albino squirrels. And these white squirrels are very popular. And the people love them, and they have a picture of them on their signs and all their city stationery and all this kind of thing. And the cats have been decimating these squirrels. Cats are prone to do that. Okay? The nature of the beast, as it were. And so the cats have been harassing the squirrels. So the city has passed an ordinance that any cat who does not respect the rights of the albino squirrels can be shot. Now, what about the rights of the cats? Okay? Even if you don't own the cat, you can shoot the cat if you see him attacking a squirrel. Now, when these guys come up with some system to reprogram the animal kingdom into right behavior, they will really achieve something. Yes? Yeah, I guess so. They'll be locking people up or running over them, I guess, pretty soon. Or shoot them, maybe, huh? Okay, but hey, isn't that right? I mean, here are people that they protest on Friday for pro-choice, okay, and the right to abort a baby, and then they protest on Saturday against the movie stars who are wearing minks. Okay to kill an unborn baby, but you can't kill a furry little animal, you see? Now, Romans 1 has something to say about that. What is it? They worship and serve the creature more than the Creator, the created thing. They got it all messed up. Why? Thinking themselves to be wise, they become fools. Now, here it is. Bottom line. We believe in enjoying life here and now and in developing our creative talents to their fullest. You know what Anton LaVey says about the Church of Satan that he founded in 1966? He says, our group is committed to lust. Our religion is about selfishness. Because that's part of man, and we intend to enjoy what this life has to offer. How much plainer can you get? Now, how is that substantially different from what they've said here? Yes, sir, Bluestein, you may have a comment?
Eagles,
oh, yes.
Alligators, they are life.
Oh, yes.
Oh,
good. You see the contradiction in that? In other words, these alligator eggs, that's life. We have to protect that life. Of course, a human fetus is just tissue. Yes?
There's a man's turtle egg.
Mm-hmm.
And his
oh.
Interesting.
Interesting. Okay, yes, sir, Rich? See, these are our fellow creatures. I mean, people are making these laws who, you know, in their early 20s, their philosophy was being developed by watching Star Wars when half the people in the movie had lobster heads. Or something like, I mean, I don't know, but isn't that right? I mean, you know, we don't know what the people that came from, you know, the system of Alpha Centauri or something like that. I mean, whether, you know, we got these catfish people over there or something. We gotta love these people. We gotta get along with them. Isn't that right? Hey, you know, when I was a boy in the science fiction stories, what's the first thing that happened when the spaceship hit the Earth? The farmer went out there and blasted him, right? Remember that? In our comic books, the farmer would go out there and shoot them. Oh, not now. Not now. Now, when they come, they are our teachers. Well, somebody thought that through. I mean, you know, really, if a spaceship lands in your backyard, mark this down. They're probably smarter than you. Okay? So, if I were you, I'd run. But don't count on it happening anytime soon. We believe in the cultivation of moral excellence. As though they were the only ones that did. Right? We respect the right to privacy. I'm not going to even read what this says. Except for this. To exercise reproductive freedom, you know what that means, to have access to comprehensive and informed health care, and to die with dignity. What does that mean? Euthanasia. Yes, sir. Okay, a little louder, Ricky. Okay. Okay. Yeah, a lot of people that get themselves into something like that find out once they find out what they're in, they want to get out. But it's not that simple sometimes. That's a real problem. Okay, we believe in the common moral decencies, altruism, integrity, honesty, truthfulness, responsibility. Human ethics is amenable to critical, rational guidance. There are normative standards that we discover together. Moral principles are tested by their consequences. Did you get that? Moral principles are tested by their consequences. What is that? End justifies the means, existentialism, pragmatism, so on. We are deeply concerned with the moral education of our children. We want to nourish reason and compassion. You see, people who are committed to humanism really believe in the innate goodness of man. They don't believe in original sin. They don't believe in the sin nature of man. And they believe that under the right conditions, man would flourish into something beautiful. That is the lie of the devil. Eat this fruit and you will be as gods. Take this simple solution. You don't need to be saved. You don't need to be delivered. You don't need to be submissive to God. If you'll just give the person the right circumstance, he will then develop into a godlike creature or person or individual. We are engaged by the arts no less than by the sciences. In other words, we're a noble people. We are the real sophisticated folks, the original Renaissance man. We are citizens of the universe and are excited by discoveries still to be made in the cosmos. Who was it? Not Asimov, that other guy. Carl Sagan, in his book Cosmos, made this statement. The cosmos is all that is, all that ever was, or all that ever will be. The universe, self-existing and not created. In the Humanist Manifesto 2, it says, we believe that the universe is self-existing and not created. And now Sagan, who's on television and in the Parade magazine all the time, comes on and makes the statement, the cosmos is all that is, all that was, and all that ever will be. Are we finding public expressions of these dogmas? Everywhere. Everywhere. We are skeptical of untested claims to knowledge and open to novel ideas and seek new departures in our thinking. We affirm humanism as a realistic alternative to theologies of despair and ideologies of violence. You notice how they connect those two together? Theologies of despair, you're going to die and go to hell, and ideologies of violence, and as a source of rich personal significance and genuine satisfaction in the service to others. Is it any wonder that we have a generation of people today who've been indoctrinated to think that you and I are the problem? You see? We believe in optimism rather than pessimism, like they do. Hope rather than despair, like them. Learning in the place of dogma. Truth instead of ignorance. See what they're saying? Joy rather than guilt or sin. Tolerance in the place of fear. Love instead of hatred. Compassion over selfishness. Beauty instead of ugliness. And reason rather than blind faith or irrationality. You hear what they're saying about us? We believe in the fullest realization of the best and noblest that we are capable of as human beings. I mean, is it any wonder that people today who've been indoctrinated into this kind of thinking believe that we're the problem? I'm not going to take the time to read this, but this is some identification about certain organizations which exist to promote humanism. The Council for Democratic and Secular Humanism, the Academy for Humanism. Let me read to you some of the people who have been inducted into the Academy of Humanism. Let me read to you what it is. The Academy of Humanism was established to recognize distinguished humanists and disseminate humanistic ideals and beliefs. The members of the Academy listed below are non-theists who are, one, devoted to free inquiry in all fields of human endeavor, two, committed to a scientific outlook and the use of the scientific method in acquiring knowledge, and three, upholders of humanist ethical values and principles. The Academy's goals include furthering respect for human rights and freedom and the dignity of the individual, tolerance of various viewpoints and willingness to compromise, commitment to social justice, a universalistic perspective that transcends national, ethnic, religious, sexual, and racial barriers, and belief in a free and open, pluralistic, and democratic society. In other words, the problem that we see. That's what they're in favor of supporting. This is the Humanist Hall of Fame. That's what that is. Okay? Let me read you some names. Humanist Laureates, number one, Steve Allen, author and humorist. Number two, Isaac Asimov, author. See if you can find anybody else I recognize. A lot of these are names that wouldn't mean anything to any of us, I don't think. But those two do. Sir Karl Popper. You'll hear his name coming up from time to time. Professor Emeritus of Logic and Scientific Method in London. Carl Sagan, astronomer in Cornell. Andrei Sakharov. You heard that name? Andrei Sakharov. Recently died, I believe, didn't he? Physicist, Nobel Peace Prize winner, Soviet dissident. I don't see any others that might have particular meaning for us right now. But those are some names that I thought you might recognize. And then there are a number of others down here that the Committee for the Scientific Examination of Religion. And on there would be Paul Kurtz and Sidney Hook. You know who Sidney Hook is? He was at the New York University. Wasn't he recently elected? That's Benjamin Hooks. I'm sorry. I'm thinking of Anthony Flew, of course, is one that you'll pick up if you do a lot of reading on this. And then, of course, James Randi is involved in that, too. The Biblical Criticism Research Project, which basically is a subcommittee of this Committee for Scientific Examination of Religion. And then there's the Faith Healing Investigation Project down here. And all kinds of sophisticated names there. It's amazing. Well, anyway, you can see some of this stuff a little later if you want to. I'm not going to go into too much more detail on that today. But let's get into the next page of our notes here and try to get some of this finished. I want to get into some other things here soon. And I want you to hear from some other people in the near future that are very well versed on this particular subject. If I can find my notes. That's not the end of them, is it? What is humanism? Okay, in order to know what humanism is, the first thing we have to know is what it's not. Humanism is not humanitarianism. Humanitarianism means human kindness. Humanism is not humaneness. Humaneness means compassion, sympathy, consideration. Humanism is not the humanities, which refers to literature, art, music, human concerns. Second question, why must we define it in order to know what humanism is? Well, because there is a basic ignorance of the movement among fundamental Christians. There are an awful lot of Christian people that are unable to distinguish. Our children are unable to distinguish humanist ideas when they're taught in school. It has a tremendous effect on public and private life. That's another reason we need to study it. It is an ill-defined concept. If I were to ask you, what is humanism, could you tell me? If you were to see humanism, would you know what you were seeing? And frankly, there is much intentional disinformation about humanism being propagated. Did you see in the affirmations of humanism some of the statements that make it sound like we're the bad guys and they're the good guys? And a lot of media people have picked up on this because those are the ideas that are so widely held. So I think that's why it's necessary for us to define it. Well, humanism is both a philosophy and a religion. As a philosophy, it refers to a system of values and beliefs accepted on evidence that guides our every action. That's the philosophy of humanism. But humanism is also a religion that deifies man, humanizes God. In an overt statement of the Humanist Manifesto, it is declared to be a religion. And in a Supreme Court case in 1961, Torcaso versus Watkins, the Supreme Court defined it as a religion. Now, if you were to go to your PTA meeting at your local school this Tuesday night or whenever they have them and say, you know, I really am not in favor of teaching religion here. Do you think they would tolerate your conversation? Do you think they would respect the fact that you were able to say that they were teaching religion there? Probably not. And yet that is precisely what's happening. The religion of humanism is being taught in the public schools today. You don't have to look very far to find it. It's in most textbooks, if not all textbooks. It's in the minds of most people. Okay? I mentioned to you before that one of the largest profession or the largest body of people in the New Age movement are in the profession of teaching. And the same thing, of course, would probably be true of humanism as well. So it's both a philosophy and a religion. Now, here's the definition. I got this from Dr. Salter. The definition, it is the belief that human knowledge worked over by human imagination is the basis for all human understanding and belief and the ultimate guide to human progress. Human knowledge worked over by human imagination is the basis for all human understanding and belief and the ultimate guide to human progress. Bottom line, man is all that man needs. Man can solve every problem that he has by himself. That's basically what humanism is. Okay? Let's go ahead and try to get through this material today, okay? Just so you can have your little study guide there, okay? Now, we have a lot of other things we want to give you before we get finished. Now, humanism can either be optimistic or pessimistic. And sometimes, what you saw in the in that material that we read to you a minute ago was that official humanism tends to be rather optimistic. Nobody would be interested in it if it wasn't. But it can either be optimistic or pessimistic. Optimistic humanism, have you got this other material here? You got that? Anybody else want me to leave that up? Okay. Optimistic humanism stresses man's aspirations, but it is weak in understanding man's aberrations. In other words, it talks to us man is likely to be able to accomplish once he is freed from the restraints of his negative religion and prejudice. But it fails to account for man's sin. It's so interesting. I'm really thankful for this opportunity to be on this panel on this radio show this Friday about Satanism. Because the law enforcement community only looks at it as antisocial behavior, but it can't explain it. Can't explain it. Why is this happening? They don't know why it's happening. They only know that it's happening. And the politicians are the ones that are looked at or looked to by the community to do something about these problems, and they don't know why it's happening either, for the most part. So their response has largely been to deny it. You see? A lot of communities, you'll hear from the law enforcement community about satanic activity, but then you talk to the political community and they'll say, oh, that's just a bunch of kids goofing off. That's just a bunch of vandals. You see? Why? Because they don't have any answers for it. Because in order to deal with what's happening, you've got to get into why it's happening. It's weak in understanding man's aberrations. Thus, there is no basis for fulfillment of man's aspirations or solutions to his aberrations. So although it's optimistic, it doesn't satisfy man's desires or man's needs. It can only hold forth hope for the future somewhere, not for that individual. Okay? So optimistic humanism ultimately becomes rather discouraging. Pessimistic humanism, on the other hand, this would be a lot of the debunking people, the James Randi guys, the grouchy humanists, okay? Pessimistic humanism insists on the absurdity of man's aspirations. It's ridiculous. Man is just a creature. To think that he is ever going to be able to understand everything, it's absurd, and so on. And it speaks to the heart of his aberrations. So sometimes you'll pick up a book that will hold forth glowing potential for man. And those people are very closely networked, I think, with much of the New Age. But then you'll find the skeptical guys, Paul Kurtz and others, who they talk about man's aberrations, and they don't hold forth a lot of hope for his aspirations. Thus, there is a constant pull toward despair. These are the ones who will tend to strengthen the death with dignity movement more than the others. Right to die. You know, nothing really matters anyway, so why suffer? Why is it not a credible philosophy? Why should we not believe it? Because there's no external reference point which is fixed and absolute, just man who is finite and limited. Now, they will challenge Christianity and say that we should not believe the Bible because of this blind leap of faith. But can you see the blind leap of faith that's made in humanism? You and I are accepting the Word of God as what it claims to be. That's an act of faith. Humanism starts with an act of faith too. And then it reasons, not nearly as logically as Christianity does many times, to its conclusions. But it begins with a statement of faith as well. There's no external reference point which is fixed and absolute, just man who is finite and limited. I made the comment last night that on a lot of these radio talk shows, there's never any attempt to settle issues or to decide, unless, of course, you talk about Rush Limbaugh, and, of course, he gives you his opinion, and then that settles it. Okay? But, you know, He is the source of knowledge and truth. But on a lot of the, well, what do you think? Well, here, how about this call? Yeah, well, hey, good point. Now, what about this? And back and forth we go. This guy gives his opinion, and that guy gives his opinion, and the other guy gives his opinion, and on and on and on we go. Well, so what? Action and interaction, that old Hegelian form of thinking. Thesis, antithesis, synthesis. New thesis. Right? Back and forth. Back. Well, you got an idea. You got an idea. Well, let's see if we can get together and come up with something new. Oh, yeah. Well, what do you think? And we just keep on moving from into new understanding and new ideas. And eventually we'll discover the truth. That's sort of like saying if we keep on sailing back and forth across the ocean, eventually we'll find out where we are. The only problem is nobody's going to live that long. You see? Okay. Do you understand what's going on with humanism now? I want you to recognize basically what the philosophy is, and I want you to be able to see it when you find it. If you have a TV in your home, you are going to be bombarded with humanistic thinking. It's becoming so that you're going to have more New Age influence, I think, than humanism in the very near future, and in many programs already. If you get a newspaper into your home, you're going to have humanistic ideas. If you get any kind of magazine, you're going to have humanistic ideas. If you've ever been to a public school or you send your kids to a public school, they're going to be bombarded with humanistic ideas. Mike, could you tell us something that may be happening in Colombia that is based on some of this stuff that we have seen? Is there some legislation, for example, that has been proposed? I'm not talking about the thing about the cane toad or any of that kind of stuff. But is there some legislation that's been proposed recently that would support some of these philosophies? A moment of meditation in the public schools. In other words, they're trying to provide an opportunity for those kids that want to pray. So here they're proposing the moment of meditation here in the South Carolina General Assembly, while confluent education is coming like a tidal wave from the West Coast. You know what confluent education is? It's the New Age philosophy that says we've got to get in touch with the higher consciousness. We've got to reach our inner self and all that business. So here what we're doing is, in the name of school prayer, we are legislating New Age meditation. Good thought. Yes. Good question. Right. I think you're going to be better. In other words, I wouldn't recommend that all of you get on a big crusade to study and become experts at this. But on the other hand, I think you need to be familiar enough with it to be able to respond to the world. Now, whenever you start studying any kind of a cult or anything else, you have to be very careful. Don't get the idea. You know, I studied judo for a while. What I learned to do was to fall, okay? And I did that a lot. But, you know, they told us, you know, now that you know how to fall and hit the mat without getting hurt, don't get the idea that you really know judo, you know? Have you ever seen a guy that, you know, maybe he's had 2 karate lessons and he goes around chopping on everybody he knows? You know what I'm talking about? And then you see the guy that's a black belt, but you don't really know it because you never know it. He never tells you. He doesn't have anything to prove. Okay? Be careful. Be careful when you pick up a little bit of information. Don't feel like that you can go head to head, you know, with some secular philosophy professor just because you know these things. Don't try to meet him on his ground, but do recognize where he's coming from. He believes that he can solve all of his own problems. He believes that he doesn't need God. He doesn't believe in sin. He doesn't believe in... Let me give you an illustration of a proper way to respond. Some guy comes up and says, well, wait, you believe I'm going to hell, don't you? How are you going to answer that? Well, yes, I do. Yeah, you see, that's your problem. You're just hateful. Now, why is he going to respond that way? Because he doesn't believe in hell. And therefore, if you think he's going to hell, he's going to think that you want him to. So somebody asked me, you think I'm going to hell, don't you? Here's what I say. Well, before I answer that, let me ask you a question. Do you believe in hell? No, I don't. Well, see, you're a universalist. Do you believe in heaven? Well, I believe there's probably something better after this life. Okay, all right, now, the problem is not what I want to happen to you. The problem is why I believe what I believe and why you believe what you believe. You see? You believe what you believe because you want to have hope for the future. I believe what I believe. Because I'm going to have hope for the future too. But I believe man's sin problem is solved in Christ. And I suspect you don't have a solution to a sin problem, so you're having to deny it. You see what I'm saying? Now you're really getting to the root of the guy's problem. Instead of him sitting there and saying, yeah, see, you got bad motives. You really don't care about me. You really don't love me. So a little bit of understanding about this kind of thing will help you in your responses to see where they're coming from. But don't try to get into a big debate with them on it until you're sure of what you're talking about. Yes. Yeah. Right. That's right. Yeah. Yeah. Present what you have authority in. Present what you have assurance of. Yeah, the blind man was a perfect example of how to meet religious unbelief. Whether he be a sinner or no, I cannot say. This one thing I do know. Whereas I was blind, now I can see. There's a lot of authority in that. An awful lot of authority in that. Let me make one more comment, and then we're going to close for today, and we'll go into this more later. So many Christian people quickly get themselves in over their head and then get into the flesh because they're embarrassed. You see this all the time. Somebody trying to confront. You see, listen, you get a guy who believes in relativism where nothing is really absolute and it doesn't matter. He doesn't have anything that's really important to him to defend. He can take this position at the beginning of his conversation and the other position at the end of his conversation. I had lunch with Mike Gallagher on Friday, and I challenged him on that. And I said, you know, Mike, you were on the radio for 3 hours telling all the Christians that they had no right to criticize the last temptation of Christ because they hadn't been to it. And then you were on there the very next week fussing about boxing and saying that you hadn't been to the boxing match and you wouldn't go. I said, now how are you going to harmonize that? He said, yeah, I know. That's all he said. You see? Why? Because it doesn't matter to him. He's not committed to any principle. You see? He's going to do whatever will get people to call in. Right? Okay. The point I'm making is, because we believe in absolutes, because we're firmly committed to them, we can get very defensive very quickly. And because we believe in the authority of the Word, we automatically think that everybody else recognizes the authority of the Word. There are three other ways in which we can influence people in addition to authority. Personality, competence, and character. And I'll talk to you next week about how to use some of those in addition to authority. Okay? Let's stand and be dismissed in prayer. Father, thank you for the opportunity to look at these things. I pray that you'd help us now in the days ahead that we might learn and grow and be aware of what's going on in our society. Lord, help us not to get to the place where we think that because we know a lot, that we can therefore defend the truth. Lord, help us to know that because we know a little, we must therefore completely trust in Thee, to be filled with the Spirit, and to confront this world with that power and not just a little bit of information. In Jesus' name, amen.